Srila Prabhupada ki jai. ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Antakoti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Premse kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Dvaita Gadadha Sri Vasudeva Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Sri Radhakrishna Gopa Govinda Sayam Kun Radhakunda Giri Govardhan ki jai, Vrindavanam ki jai, Mathuram ki jai, Navadeepam ki jai, Jagannathaswami ki jai, Yuvanamai ki jai, Srimati Lalasi Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi ki jai, Gaura Premananda Hari Hari. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Hari Bol. Om Aganath Timurandasha Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshura Miritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, who has so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So today's seminar is basically Guru Tattva, that is, the truth about a guru. Like, what is the need for a guru? Who is a guru? What is a guru? How to find one? And what do you do with one once you found him or her? I mean, that sounds kind of humorous. So first of all, we're talking about different types of gurus. Because the word guru can mean a variety of things. For example, it can mean just a regular teacher. Just like we see here. Does anyone recognize who that is? I know that's Arjun, but who's with Arjun? Dronacharya. He was the martial arts guru of Arjuna. And that's the famous story where Arjuna was shooting for the eye of the bird. But he wasn't the spiritual guru of Arjuna. And also we have something called the Kula Guru, which is the family guru. And some of you from India are familiar with this, that sometimes when you're born in a Brahmin family, you're 5, 6, or 7 years old, you'll get the Gayatri thread, the thread in the first line of the Gayatri from the guru. That's a family guru. But he's not your ultimate guru or spiritual guru. And then there's another one called, of course, he's dressed in Western dress, so it doesn't have to be dressed, the guru doesn't have to be dressed in a dhoti. It's called the Vartma Pradarshika Guru, one who points out the path. Now, the typical example of that given in the Vedic literatures is someone named Suniti. Everyone's heard of Suniti before. I'll explain what, who, and who she is. So you have Dhruva Maharaj, and he was the son of King Uttanapada. And Dhruva Maharaj's mother was Suniti. And King Uttanapada had another wife, her name was Suruchi. And King Uttanapada liked Suruchi because she had a good taste, that's what Suruchi means. More attractive. Everybody gets a name in the Vedic culture according to their propensities. Anyway, so Suruchi was more attractive, so King Uttanapada was more attracted to her. And as a result, when Dhruva Maharaj, his son, wanted to sit on his lap, Suruchi kicked him off the king's lap because she was envious of her co-wife. Actually, the word for co-wife is sapatni, which also means with one's enemy. So none of you should think of having more than one wife. You should follow the example of Lord Ramchandra, Eka Patni Vrata. Because if you have Dvi Patni Vrata, Tri Patni Vrata, you're in trouble. Anyway, with the government and with your life. So she kicked Dhruva Maharaj off his father's lap, and Dhruva Maharaj went to his mother and said, you know, what should I do? And he said that actually, Suruchi said that worshiping Lord Vishnu means that I can actually get a chance to sit on my father's lap again. And Suniti said, I've heard Lord Vishnu is in the forest. So he went to the forest. So that's the Vartma Pradarshika Guru, one who shows you the path. I mean, even for many people in the 1960s, George Harrison might be considered the Vartma Pradarshika Guru. Anyone's heard of George Harrison here? George Harrison had his song, My Sweet Lord, where he was singing Hare Krishna as well as Hallelujah. And people listened to it and they got it started in their path. So the Vartma Pradarshika Guru is not your eternal guru. There's also something called a Siksha Guru. For those of you who speak Yiddish, it's not Siksha, anyway. In Yiddish it means a non-Jewish girl. But anyway, so in Sanskrit it means an instructing guru. And so the instructing guru and the initiating guru may be one. So that's called Siksha Guru. And here you see Srila Prabhupada is Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada giving instructions at the Radha Damodar Temple in Vrindavan to many of his disciples. And Prabhupada also leading the kirtan in the Los Angeles Temple, and there's his humble servant behind him. This was in 1973 or something like that, when I was in a different body. Because every 7 years you change your bodies. So I've reincarnated several times since then. People ask about my past life, it's one of my past lives. So, and there's the Diksha Guru, the guru who gives you the mantra, maybe the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and maybe the Gayatri mantras. In our Gaudiya Vaishnavism and Prabhupada's teachings, we have 7 Gayatri mantras in addition to the Brahma Gayatri, not in addition, including the Brahma Gayatri mantra. That's the Diksha Guru. And we also have a sannyas guru. All these different types of gurus, interesting. The sannyas guru is the one who gives you sannyas. You ladies don't have to worry about that. Or maybe you do if your husbands are interested in taking sannyas. But the sannyas guru gives you the renounced order of life, and he gives you your danda. A danda is a stick to beat off people. No, it's beat off the monkeys when you're going around Govardhan. No, the danda is a stick signifying that you've dedicated your life, your mind, body, and words to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's a sannyas guru. It's a more of a formality. It's not an eternal relationship. Generally, the Diksha Guru and the Siksha Guru, they have eternal relationships with the person whom they are instructing, guiding, or giving the mantra. So the question arises, but why do we need a spiritual guru? I mean, obviously, we do need, let's say, teachers in this world. I think just about everybody here has been taught at some point in life, right? Someone taught you how to read and write, right? Someone taught you even how to walk. Someone taught you how to eat with your proper hands. You know, you eat with your hands and not with your feet. You're not like a monkey. So therefore, you know, and those of us from a good culture, we eat with our right hand, not with the left hand. So we were taught these things. So sometimes people think that in spiritual life, you don't need to be taught. It's all spontaneous. As it was said in the 1960s, just be here now. If it feels good, it's good for you, and it's spiritual. And just chant Kumbaya instead of Hare Krishna. So this is a misunderstanding about spiritual life. If it takes so much instruction to progress materially, and to do well materially, then what to speak of the instruction it takes to progress spiritually, which is much more important. I mean, if you try to teach yourself spiritually, you're going to be in trouble. It's like I tried to teach myself the piano without a teacher, and basically all I can do is play chopsticks on the piano. You know chopsticks? You know, anyway. So, that you're all gonna, you, the only thing you're going to be able to do is play spiritual chopsticks. If you don't have a spiritual guru. Yeah, just be in ABCs. And then you'll probably play it the wrong way, because playing it with these two fingers is not the way you're supposed to play in a piano. So, why do we need? First of all, we have to ask the question, you know, about something called epistemology. You know, how do you know what you know? You know, so this is an important question. You know, how do we know what we know to be absolutely true? Let's say in spiritual life. I mean, there's different methods of knowing things. You know, you can see things, aksha, pachaksha, with the eyes, or you can hear about things, some history. But these are all faulty methods when dealing with spiritual matters, because spiritual matters are beyond the empirical jurisdiction. That's a fancy word for all of you. Beyond the normal jurisdiction or vision of the eyes or the ears or any of the material senses or the extensions of the material senses which the scientists use. You can't really measure spirit. It's just too subtle to measure. I mean, we know it exists because we are conscious. As Descartes said, does anyone remember what Descartes said? What?
I think, therefore I am.
Yeah, cogito ergo sum. I think, therefore I am. You know, in other words, cogito doesn't mean just think, but I actually feel, experience, and therefore I am. Otherwise, if you think you're just this body, who is thinking they're just the body anyway? But if you think you're just the body, then why bother to do anything? Why bother to take care of your kids? Because basically, when you're dead, right? When you're old, it's over, it's over. So why bother? Isn't it? Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. Might as well enjoy while you're in the body. But actually, we have to understand spiritual matters from a different process, because in the material world, dealing with spiritual matters, and even dealing to a large extent with material matters, we have defects, as you see here. You know, we make mistakes. As you see, people crash their cars. We are an illusion. We confuse a rope for a snake, and vice versa. We cheat. And so many problems we have, and we're cheating, and we have imperfect senses. So because of these four defects of the conditioned soul, we can't really understand spiritual things. And practically speaking, we can't even understand ultimately what material things are. I remember when I went to the university, I studied physics. I was studying nuclear physics. And they were changing the theories all the time. And now the latest theory is the string theory. You know, so many different theories. But nobody knows for sure. Actually, the scientists work backwards. They come up with a theory that fits the data. Right? That's called, when I was in school, that was called fudging. Of course, when I did experiments in school, I fudged the other way. I had the theory, and then I made up my data to fit the theory. Did anyone do that in the university? I'm sure you have. It's easier. I mean, in chemistry, you're doing a titration. You just make everything fit the bell curve. You know, it's wonderful. And so I really didn't have to bother myself with all these hellish chemicals because my laboratory was in my mind. So I don't suggest that to you students. That's the cheating propensity. So in addition, we have these three modes of nature, and we also have what's depicted here, Krishna giving everybody intelligence according to his desire. So if you desire to forget God, you get intelligence in how to be a nice atheist, how to be bewildered. I mean, God's the best cheater. Talking about cheating propensity, God, the cheating propensity came from God. So if you want to play pin the tail on the donkey with God, you're the donkey and God pins it on you. So he's the greatest of all cheats. And so, we have an interesting statement from this Tattva Upanishad that if we want to find out the truth, I'll read this, it's from the second part, second chapter, text 9. Naishatar kena matira paneya pruktana yeva sujanaya preshta. This realization, my dear boy, cannot be acquired by logic. It must be spoken by an exceptionally qualified spiritual master to a knowledgeable disciple. This is from the Upanishad. In other words, we have to look for a spiritual master, just like we have material masters in different subject matters. So what is this meaning of guru? Let's discuss this for a second. You know, we hear this word guru all the time. So let's hear some of the meanings of guru. First of all, it means heavy. I would not want to accept him as my guru. But that's what it means. Of course, heavy not like that heavy character you see, which you wouldn't want to meet in a dark alleyway someday, but heavy with spiritual knowledge. That's the point. And as you see, his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, situated there with many of the books. In fact, there were more books than that that he translated and commented on. And so his books, you could spend a whole lifetime reading them to acquire spiritual knowledge. But heavy with spiritual knowledge doesn't mean simply rote learning. It means what we call vijnana, or realization. In other words, you practice. Just like I mentioned in the university before, you have some theory and then you go to the laboratory to practice. But you shouldn't be like I was in the laboratory making up your data. In other words, telling someone, yes, I chanted my 16 rounds. Or I did this spiritual thing or that spiritual thing. You should actually do it. You can't just enter the data and pass the course. And guru also means teacher. Someone who teaches us. Guru also means one who cuts through illusion. It's a nice slide, isn't it? With a chainsaw of transcendental knowledge. Actually, cutting. Just remarking on that cutting technique. Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, his divine grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, was known for his cutting technique. He would go to people who were preaching philosophies that were not bona fide, in other words, bogus philosophies, and he would sometimes grab them by the scruff of their neck and said, what are you teaching this philosophy for? One philosophy he was pretty much against was what's called Mayavad philosophy. And Mayavad means basically the Lord's body is material, we're all one, everything's one. And so he would pick them up by their shirt. He was a very tall personality. And he would say, if you think everything is one, why don't you just wear a ball of cotton instead of this shirt? And I remember doing something similar when I would go to the universities. I would argue with people. People would say, everything is one. And then I'd grab their wallet. And I would say, your wallet is my wallet, and my wallet is yours, so thank you very much. And I said, you know, you have to really practice what you preach. You think everything is one. So, you see, Srila Prabhupada and many of the acharyas, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they would speak very strongly to cut through illusion. Not just blowing on the boil, but to lance the boil of illusion. And also, as guru means, sets a good example. Because this is the word acharya, which should be actually synonymous in one sense with guru, with a bona fide guru. A bona fide guru does two things. It's called prachar and achar. Prachar means speaking, and achar means acting. So both have to be consistent. He can't be a hypocrite. Now I remember when I was young, many of my teachers and relatives, they would often say to me, do as I say, don't do as I do. They would say, you know, I remember people smoking cigarettes, for example. And they said, don't you ever smoke cigarettes. What kind of example are you setting? So example, as Srila Prabhupada said, is more important than precept. So these are some of the aspects of what it means to be a guru. So how can we ascertain if someone is a bona fide guru? Of course, if someone's not bona fide, they're not even a guru. But it's sort of an oxymoron to say unbona fide guru. So Srila Prabhupada stated, and we'll read this, the guru is the representative of Krishna, so there are symptoms of who is a guru. The general symptoms are described in the Vedas. Tad vijnanartham sa gurumeva avigachet samitpani shrotriyam brahmanishtam. And that's from the Mundaka Upanishad. And the translation of that is the guru must come in disciplic succession. We're going to go over all these details in the slideshow. And he must have heard thoroughly about the Vedas from his spiritual master. And generally, Prabhupada said, a guru's symptom is that he is a perfect devotee, that's all. And he serves Krishna by preaching his message. And so the guru comes in disciplic succession. We see this, evam parampara praptam, imam raja shayo vidhu. Very important principle, because we're talking about epistemology, or how do you know what you know. So it's not that the guru comes up with his own philosophy because he's in touch with some subtle living entities We've heard this before, you know, someone does a seance. You know what a seance is? No, you don't know what a seance is. A seance is where you get a bunch of people in your basement. It has to be dark. And you all hold your hands on the table. And you say, I'm feeling the spirits coming. And the table starts to rise somehow or other. Maybe because the medium, the person conducting the seance, is kicking it. But it starts to rise, and then you hear a voice. Yes, this is so-and-so, Ramtha, speaking from the netherworld. And your uncle wants to speak to you. I mean, it's a very good business. We have one devotee in our community whose mother was very adept at it, and she would make several thousand dollars a week doing this. So, if any of you want to go into business, I can set you up. So, I get 50%. So, anyway, it's simply... So, talking about where the knowledge comes from, it comes directly from God. Dharmam tusakshat bhagavat pranitam, through what's called the disciplic succession. And there's four bona fide disciplic successions according to the Vedic paradigm. We have the Lakshmi disciplic succession, the Rudra's disciplic succession, Kumara disciplic succession, and the Brahma disciplic succession. And all these ultimately start with Krishna, Vishnu. So we happen to be in the Brahma disciplic succession. But those in the Lakshmi disciplic succession, there are many nice devotees. And that's, of course, the Sri Sampradaya, which is very prominent in South India, particularly Sri Rangam, Tirumala, and places like that. And these are bona fide gurus in that disciplic succession. So the knowledge is passed down, as our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, said, like a ripened fruit. The way that they harvest mangoes is one person picks a mango from the tree and passes it down to the next, passes it down to the next. Nobody throws it to the ground because it gets smashed at that point. And in this way, it's transmitted, the mango or the knowledge, without any change. Now, sometimes if you have a break in that chain, then the mango gets ruined or the knowledge gets ruined. Krishna himself says that in the Gita in the fourth chapter. He says, Evam param praptam imam rajasho vidahu. So this knowledge was passed down from Vivaswan to Manu to Ikshvaku, and then at some point it was broken. Because the chain is only as strong as its weakest link. And then it has to be reestablished. So one has to be in an unbroken chain of disciplic succession. Very important point. And another point made in this verse that we quote in the beginning, Tad Viganartam Sa Guru Meva Bigachet, the guru must be a servant of his guru. Now, these same qualities we're talking about in relationship to guru are applicable in relationship to disciple. Because if someone is actually a disciple, which means disciplined by the guru, it's from the root shashdhatu in Sanskrit, then he actually becomes qualified to become a guru. And if one is a good guru, that means he's been a good disciple and is a good disciple. It's not that a disciple ceases to be a disciple. That's a Mayavadi conception, that you go to your guru and say, thank you all for this knowledge. Hasta la vista, guru. I don't think you understand what hasta la vista means. I mean, if you've seen some of these movies, you'll understand. Anyway, goodbye, adios, senor, or ciao, if you happen to be Italian. Anyway, so it's not like that. The guru and disciple relationship is eternal. So Prabhupada, what is this? This is a boat. What does it mean? This boat is called the Jala Duta. And this is the boat that Srila Prabhupada came over on many, many years ago, 1965. And Srila Prabhupada was very old, like 70 years old, and he was following the order of his spiritual master's servant. He took the order as his life and soul, more than any of his other godbrothers. And because of that, he was specifically empowered. So Srila Prabhupada chose his exalted position by always acting in the condition or situation as servant of his spiritual master. And he endured two heart attacks on the way over. And Prabhupada had a dream, and Krishna appeared to him, not in this boat, but Krishna appeared to him, rowing the boat in his multifarious incarnations. And he assured Prabhupada of success, and we know Prabhupada was success. And so here's something about being the servant of the spiritual master. Just, we haven't done put in many quotes, you know, big quotes in this PowerPoint, but there's a few. Similarly, a devoted disciple, the spiritual master, would rather die with the spiritual master, this is from the Bhagavatam, than fail to execute the spiritual master's mission. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes down upon this earth to reestablish the principles of religion, so his representative, the spiritual master, also comes to reestablish religious principles. It is the duty of the disciples to take charge of the mission of the spiritual master and execute it properly. Otherwise, the disciples should decide to die along with the spiritual master. In other words, to execute the will of the spiritual master, the disciple should be prepared to lay down his life and abandon all personal considerations. So that's the mood of servitude. Prabhupada would often say that the beads we get in our neck, called Kanti Mala, not Kunti Mala, Kanti Mala, you know, not Queen Kunti's Mala. That means neck, mala around the neck. So he said sometimes we can call them like dog tags, because we're servants. And that's actually our constitutional position. As much as we try to become masters, even in this world, that's as much as we will fail and be unhappy. And as much as we understand our position as servants of Krishna, Krishna's representatives, in fact, of everybody, then we'll become happier. That's the point. You think you're a master, Ishwaroham, Ahambogi, Siddhoham, Balavan, Sukhi, then you must accept Ravana as your guru. That was Ravana's mantra. You know, everybody knows Ravana? Ravan, Lankishvara, Lankishvara Ravan, Sitapati Ravan. He thought he was going to become Sitapati, Lankapati, isn't it? Jagatpati Ravan. So, you want that? No. That's miserable. Ravan was miserable. This is the last real big quote. In conclusion, if a disciple is very serious to execute the mission of the spiritual master, this is the point, that we can judge the guru if he devotes himself to the mission. Of course, that means mission of Prabhupada is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So that is actually a very important condition, precondition. He immediately, if he's serious to execute the mission, he immediately associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead by Vani or Vapu. That means by the instructions or by the form. Vapu is form. This is the only secret of success. I'm going to emphasize that. Prabhupada says the only secret of success in seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only. Only is a pretty exclusive word, isn't it? As far as I know. Instead of being eager to see the Lord in some bush in Vrindavan, while at the same time engaging in sense gratification, if one instead sticks to the principle of following the words of the spiritual master, he will see the Supreme Lord without difficulty. So here's Prabhupada. Here's the quality. Prabhupada heard nicely from his guru. In this particular instance, where this picture, of course it wasn't taken, but it's drawn illustrating a particular instance when Prabhupada was walking around Radhakund with his spiritual master. And his spiritual master gave him words that stuck with Prabhupada throughout all of his pastimes. And those words were, if you ever get any money, what? Print and distribute books. And he also said, because there was some trouble in one of the temples, the devotees were fighting over different rooms in the temple in Calcutta. He said, if I could sell the marble from the temple, what would I do? Print books with it. So, Prabhupada only met with the spiritual master a few times. I mean, there were many other devotees who were more, let's say, physically present with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But Prabhupada took every word as his life and soul. Just a few times, a few words, and every word taken as his life and soul. In other words, Prabhupada heard nicely from his guru, And he repeated the same message to us. Prabhupada said, "Do you ever get any money to print and distribute books?" And Prabhupada was encouraging the devotees even to have competitions in distributing books. I remember in 1976, we competed with a devotee named Tamal Krishnamars. I was in charge of a temple in Venezuela. And we did 35,000 Bhagavad Gitas in 1 month. And I explained this to Prabhupada when I was with him. And his eyes opened wide. And when I pointed out the person who had actually done 10,000 of those Gitas, he said, "That person has the mercy of Krishna." And then Prabhupada, understanding that the rest of us were envious of that person, Prabhupada said, "But you all have the mercy of Krishna." And then Prabhupada said, "Well, in one sense, the gopis are the highest." So Prabhupada was just like really playing us a little bit there. So Prabhupada was repeating the same message, not changing anything. Of course, adapting it to the situation. You know, putting it in the Western language. I mean, Prabhupada was very adept. I mean, one thing that they presented during the 1960s, Prabhupada, they had the slogan, "Stay High Forever." And of course, that was a hippie slogan, right? And that was based upon taking some herbal medicine. And then Prabhupada utilized it to preach Krishna consciousness. You chant Hare Krishna and you stay high, all the way high, forever with Krishna. So, here's another verse. So we must know, preach, and practice, Prabhupada said. And Lord Chaitanya, this is a verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Kiva vipra kiva nyasi shudra kena naya krishna tapodeta se guru hai. So it really doesn't matter as far as a person's status, previous status, purva status. It doesn't matter whether a person is a vipra, learned scholar in Vedic wisdom, or is born in a Brahmin family, in a lower family, or is in the renounced order of life. If he is master in the science of Krishna, he is the perfect and bona fide spiritual master. So it's not a requirement that we look at someone's past. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakura says we should not criticize a Vaishnava for their past or anything like that, or even for accidental mistakes. And another quality of a bona fide spiritual master, because this is nishtha, no deviation from Krishna consciousness. That means don't break the regulative principles. You can have a little romance in household life if you like. But no extramarital romance. No intoxication. And you see that man who's like an animal, like a tiger? Prabhupada commented that when the Russians said to him that we need to eat meat because it makes us strong like tigers, Prabhupada said, "You'll become tigers because of that." And of course, gambling. So, no deviation from Krishna consciousness. When I originally made this slide up, it's actually a little funny. I put some other things in, like a man playing golf, and someone bungee jumping. But then I looked at it and thought, I don't want to be too heavy with people. So, but I would think that generally a guru wouldn't be bungee jumping, right? Just like I was recently visiting these devotees in Wisconsin, and we passed by the airport, and the devotees said, well, you know, they thought they would do some service. They said to me, "Oh, Maharaj, here they do skydiving. Would you like to go? We'll sponsor you." And I said, no. It really wouldn't be in line with my particular position. And it really wouldn't look good on Facebook. You know, chanting japa as I fly to the ground. Anyway, so, and then also another thing, a bona fide guru must be 24-7, that means 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, engaged in Krishna consciousness. Here you see Prabhupada, what is he doing? He's dictating his Bhaktivedanta purports. And generally, what time of the day would he be dictating his Bhaktivedanta purports? Anyone know? Like 1 o'clock in the morning. You know, Prabhupada would wake up, dictate his purports, and he was producing all these books while traveling all around the world, answering thousands and thousands of letters from his disciples, dealing with the management of ISKCON. It's incredible what Prabhupada did. simply incredible. I mean, even one of those things would be overwhelming for me. And opening up 108 temples in the span of 11 years. Pretty amazing, isn't it? I mean, we're struggling to open up another, you know, to build a temple across the street. In so many years. We've been here since 1982. How many years is that? Anyone do the calculation? 31 years and counting. And, you know, we're still struggling. Still struggling with so many things. Can't even get the air conditioner fixed on the other side of the room. Where's Gopal? Is he here? Is he there?
He's in the back.
He's in the back, okay. The Prabhupada opened up 11 temples, fully functioning temples with hundreds of devotees. Prabhupada said hundreds of devotees in each temple. So, let's talk about the functions. Now we know the qualities of a guru, you know, ontological position. So, what are the functions of a guru? What does he do? And how does, in relationship to the disciple? Well, he teaches three different aspects of Krishna consciousness, which are known as Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojan. Sambandha basically means the knowledge of one's relationships, a relationship with Krishna, Krishna's relationship with the material energy, the material energy's relationship with the jiva soul, etc. And also the knowledge of the soul, knowledge of all these different aspects. Knowledge, jnana. But then comes Abhideya jnana. In other words, what do you do now that you have that knowledge? How do you connect with Krishna? How do you perfect your life? How do you ultimately go back to Godhead and think of Krishna at the time of death? That's Abhideya jnana, which is, we sometimes call that bhakti yoga. And then finally, prayojana. What is perfection? I mean, what happens when you go back to the spiritual world, and who will take care of you there? And the bona fide guru is also there in the spiritual world to greet you, saying, you know, I'm happy you made it back after all those lifetimes. I was waiting for you. So, let's talk about Sambandha first. Here's a little, nice little cartoon about Sambandha, where Krishna talks about being in control of everything. The whole creation comes from him. Everything's manifested. Bhutva, bhutva, paliyate, again and again. And the guru is teaching that to his disciples, and that's completely opposite of what the material, empirical scientists are generally teaching. You know, everything started with the Big Bang. But who lit off the firecracker that caused the Big Bang to begin with, right? How could something come from nothing, according to the scientists? They can't trace that out. Well, they have all these theories, like time is circular, I know that. But it's all speculation. Whereas the guru, he teaches his disciple who Krishna is and what the soul is. And he teaches about the body, the subtle body, the gross body, and the spiritual body. So we have a soul, a spirit soul, and that spirit soul is carried by the subtle body to different gross bodies, like the air carries aromas. That's why if you die in a certain frame of consciousness, you will take birth and be able to exhibit that same frame of consciousness in your next life. If you die thinking of your pet dog, you will be a dog. Like Prabhupada said about someone who was attached to the stock market in Mumbai, he said, yes, he took birth in the stock market as a rat in his next life. So whatever your consciousness, he didn't get a chance to buy and sell as a rat. So these are different aspects of what we call Sambandha jnana. That means knowledge. And this is knowledge that of the spiritual world, the coverings of the material world, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego, what's happening in the spiritual world, etc. And then we get to Abhideya. The first thing in Abhideya is what to avoid. That's called yam. There's yam and niyam, like in Hatha Yoga. What you shouldn't do, because if you do those things, you'll see the king of yam, Yamaraj. And so there's a no meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling. It's simple in Kali Yuga. You really don't have to get more complex than that. You know, you follow a codicil, no grains on a codicil, that's easy. But it's not really a difficult procedure. And then the guru engages you in service. And here we see the person engaged in serving the deities, cooking for Krishna. Because one of the important functions of the guru is to understand the psychophysical nature of the disciple. We talk about psycho, that doesn't mean he's psycho. That means to understand their nature in terms of varnashram, whether they're a teacher, Brahmin, whether they're administrator and or military man, whether they're a farmer and banker, or whether they're just worker, and engage people according to that in Krishna's service. Like Krishna says in the Gita, that every person can become perfect engaged according to their nature. No one should try to imitate another's work. So that's an important function of guru. So it's important to, when one has a guru, the guru can help one fulfill that function. It's not only here's some spiritual knowledge, but also what to do practically in your life, with your spiritual life, and with your practical life. And there's different duties here. The guru is engaging the disciples, teaching them spiritual life, engaging them again in deity worship. The disciple may massage the body of the guru. The guru has two aspects, the vani and vapu. Vapu means body. While the spiritual master is present, one serves the guru. And when the spiritual master disappears, one serves the words of the guru. And some other aspects of devotional service, kirtan, dancing and chanting, japa, and here we see book distribution. There's someone I know in that. That I don't know who that is, but it's someone I vaguely remember. Where is she? There she is. That's. She was the. She modeled for that particular picture. And she used to distribute many, many books in the airport. And some of the devotees here are devotees because she distributed books to them, like Gopal.
Gopal.
Right? Gopal was traveling in the airport and he had a little container with him. Should I tell him what was in the container? There was his cat. And his name was Tom. It was the life and soul of Gopal. And then she invited him to the temple. He called up and I answered. I was answering the phone at that time. And he came and he's here. And that was how many years ago? Too many?
Many.
So many, many devotees came because of that. Other duties can do. And this is also in the temple. But outside of the temple, people can do so many things, and working at, quote, normal jobs, and giving the results to Krishna, but always thinking of why they're doing what they're doing. Like teachers, military men. We even had devotees who went to Iraq, and they had a Rath Yatra in Iraq. Can you imagine that? It was one of my disciples, in fact. He had a Rath Yatra in Iraq. Not... Oh, in the base, obviously. It wasn't in the middle of Baghdad. But he had an actual Rath Yatra there. And so devotees are engaged in so many different activities. I even have one disciple who is a vice chancellor of a university in some Arab country. And he's Muslim. And he devotes his whole life to Krishna, chants 16 rounds a day, and he's initiated and everything like that. So, of course, his position is like Vibhishan, who existed between, like the tongue between the teeth. Because if the teeth discovered who he is, he gets bit. Anyway, so you can do anything. So then finally we talk about prayojana, the goal, and the goal is what? To have a relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world, to have fun. Being Krishna's friend, being Krishna's servant, being Krishna's parent, or being Krishna's lover, any of these different relationships. And we all have an inherent, natural relationship. We just have to wake up to it. We have amnesia now. Everybody knows what amnesia is? Amnesia means you forgot who you are. Sometimes we have partial amnesia when we wake up in the morning. We wake up, where am I? Who am I? And then you, your wife, your husband has to tell you who you are, what your name is.
and say, oh yeah, I'm Gopal. Sorry. So you just have to be reminded. So, no, he's not like that. I call him up in the morning. So anyway, so this is the ultimate goal. That's why we're doing what we're doing. And so the guru guides his disciple in this stage too. So everyone in Islam is Prabhupada's siksha disciple. His instructions are the ultimate authority for everyone and the ultimate standard by which all other gurus are measured. All the gurus' instructions are measured. So everyone is meant to take shelter of his divine guru, Srila Prabhupada. However, Srila Prabhupada does not initiate, the guru does not initiate after he's left this world. Srila Prabhupada's position is extraordinary. A singular position. He came from the spiritual world. He was with Krishna, and Krishna told him to go down, or come down, as the case may be. From our position, it's, you know, coming down. From his vision, it's going down. Because he came here. We're down. We've been down so long, it seems like up to us. So, isn't it? We're very attracted to all these little gadgets and everything like that. So, he came from the spiritual world because Krishna said, you go there to print and distribute books and preach. And Prabhupada's advent was predicted by Lord Nityananda. And so many predictions, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, great acharyas, predicted Prabhupada. And Prabhupada's writings are considered to be the law books of the Krishna Conscious Society, in fact, of all society. And Prabhupada considered it a success when the Supreme Court judge would wear a tilak. And right now we have a member of Congress who wears tilak. One of the members of Congress from Hawaii. So, and also dedication to be a member of ISKCON means dedication to Srila Prabhupada's mission, which is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Prabhupada compared ISKCON sometimes to the UK. Not that, I'm not saying it's like the UK, but the patriotism that people would feel towards their country, my country. You know, so if there's some problem in the country, you try to rectify it. I mean, you don't run to Moscow or someplace like that. You try to rectify it, the problem, rather than deserting your country. We don't want to be like the proverbial rats deserting a sinking ship. Of course, ISKCON's not sinking. It's doing quite well. After Prabhupada left, Prabhupada left with 108 temples, and now we have something like 800 temples in the world, and millions of followers, and Rathyatras in all the major cities of the world, in India, so many places. So it's continuing. So our Siksha Gurus and Diksha Gurus guide us in service to Prabhupada and his mission. Because Prabhupada's our ultimate Siksha Gurus, but we have other Siksha Gurus too, who teach us, and the standard of their teaching should always be to integrate us and encourage us in serving Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's mission. Because Prabhupada's mission is meant, as the Bhagavatam says, for creating a revolution in the misdirected lives of an impious civilization. Tadvag visaga janataga viplavo yasmin pratishlogam vadavachapi namana nantashi yashoni gataniyat shinvanti gayanti grinanti yat sadava. That's the Bhagavatam. So these words are meant for creating that revolution, and this movement is meant for ultimately changing the face of the world. Because you may say, how is it going to change the face of the world now? You can hardly build a temple across the street. But we've just started. We just started a few years ago. And if you examine the pace of progress or increase that we've made in a few short years, it's astounding. And compare it to other religious societies when they first began. So summary. Let's summarize this whole thing. Prabhupada is the primary source of Siksha. His mission is the focal point of our service. Everyone has an eternal connection with Srila Prabhupada. It's not that someone who saw Prabhupada physically has more of a connection than anyone else. Everybody has a connection. If they make that connection, making the connection means hearing and following and serving. And both Diksha and Siksha Gurus, this is a basic standard, must be dedicated to Prabhupada's mission, must have heard nicely from Prabhupada and be repeating nicely, must be fixed 24/7 in Krishna consciousness, no deviation, and must be in a position to give practical guidance to disciples according to the disciples' psychophysical nature. You have to have a relationship with the person, an active relationship. It's not simply like a rock and roll star. There has to be a give and take. Pranipatena, pariprashnena sevya, right? Tadviri pranipatena pariprashnena sevya. As Krishna himself says, if you want to learn the truth, it's from the Bhagavad Gita, of course, just try to approach a spiritual master. Inquire submissively and render service. Such a realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. In the end, things must be a realized soul. And there's a special role of Diksha Guru. He gives the mantra and the spiritual name, witnesses the vows of the disciples, and gives permission to the disciples if they want to take Siksha from others. But otherwise, Siksha Guru and Diksha Guru are equal. In fact, many links in our disciplic succession are Siksha links. That is, you have like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his Siksha Guru is Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, and that's a Siksha link. Rather, and you don't hear so much about his Diksha link there. So instruction is the most important thing, and fidelity to his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada's mission and instructions and example are the most important things. So, thank you very much. Any questions or comments about any of these points? The brief summary of what, you know, guru is, what to do when you find a guru, who is a guru, why do we need a guru? Yes. It's important to take Diksha because the Acharyas mention that as one of the important items in devotional service, and it connects one in a formal way. I mean, just like people nowadays, they say, people shouldn't get married, they should just live with each other. But there's no commitment. Krishna appreciates that commitment, Krishna accepts that commitment, Krishna demands that commitment. You know, people just live with each other without being married. I mean, I just got a letter from people I'm preaching to in Slovenia, and they said, you know, I was just like saying, get married. They've been together for 10 years now. 200 children. No, not quite. I said, get married. I said, you really think we should get married? I said, well, I'm 10 years, you know, I think that's enough. But people are not into making commitments nowadays, right? Everything is just like, you know, you flow, you want to be an eclectic disciple. Eclectic means you can pick and choose different instructions from different personalities. So, I mean, obviously that may be a good idea if you're going to a doctor. Can I have a second opinion? But if you're going to a guru and the guru says, you know, maybe you can do this service, and he says, I'd like to go somewhere else and get a second opinion. And a third opinion. And obviously you can ultimately find someone to give you an opinion that meets what you want to do, right? So it's required to make commitments. And that's what Diksha is, and getting the mantra. Because the mantra is transmitted through the process of Diksha. Yes?
In this point itself, you have so many different gurus with the transition. How do you know which one is right for you?
Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. I mean, you should get a chance to observe, hear. I mean, you can hear, definitely hear. I mean, we have so many internet things like iskondesiretree.com where everybody has their classes. And observe and see if it's practical relationship. You can actually get instructions. The person will communicate with you because you need some communication. I mean, without communication, it's very theoretical. Because we are not on the platform of being able to communicate telepathically right now. Some of you may be on that platform. The super soul is directly talking to you. Yes, what did you say? Okay. You know, it's in your heart. You know, you just talk to him, yeah. Or, you know, super soul calls me. Hello, this is Veer Krishna Maharaj who's speaking. Super soul. It's like that joke when the Pope visited India, and the devotees, when they visited Vrindavan, and the devotees had a telephone where they could call God, Krishna, call God. So the Pope said, "Can I borrow your telephone because I want to talk to God?" And then afterwards, the Pope said, "How much money do I owe you for the telephone call?" And the devotee said, "Nothing, because it's a local call." It's been burned down, obviously. Some of you heard that joke before, but so because we can't really, because we have these imperfections, we really need someone to sort of be the intermediary and to guide us in Krishna consciousness. It's an absolute necessity. All right, and then we have, as far as finding. Then you got all these practical things. Is the person qualified? Is the relationship practical? Can I actually communicate? Does the person know me? So you got all these questions you got to ask. And it also, it's an affair of the heart.
What if you're in a family situation, you are interested in having a diksha or diksha, but the rest of the family is not? So what do you
So you just do it. I mean, I was with my mother, and my mother said, well, she didn't say you couldn't take initiation. She didn't even know what initiation was. She said, you know, I'm dying because you joined the Hare Krishna movement. You know, that's a standard thing they do in families, isn't it? They threaten to commit suicide. They threaten to die. And I said, well, Hare Krishna, I'll be there for you. You know, I'll come to the funeral home or whatever. But my mother threatened them, and I still went ahead, and then she's still alive today, as I mentioned before many times. She's 85 years old and swims 50 laps in a swimming pool and has more energy than I do. So, and she's happy that I'm a member of the Krishna Conscious Movement, because now she can brag about her son, the guru. And her other son became a doctor, and I mentioned this in some previous class. Her other son became a doctor, and he goes around bathing other people's feet because he's a foot doctor. And, you know, sannyasi, you go around to people's houses, they bathe your feet. So who's in a higher position? And she knows it. So. And I have better birthday parties than he does. So another question. If he doesn't get enough inspiration from his guru, then he can approach other Shiksha gurus who are following Prabhupada's line. That's right. Doesn't get inspiration from any of the gurus? Then maybe he needs to eat some more sweets or something like that. His diet is deficient or something. Then he's committing offenses. If someone doesn't get inspiration from any other gurus or from chanting the holy names, that means he's committing offenses somehow or other against Vaishnavas. That's actually it, because it's very inspiring. Just like I encourage devotees to chant 64 rounds on a codicy, and, you know, one person did it already. Leela Shakti did it. Anyway, so, see here? Yeah, she did it. And she's inspired, because she's not committing any offenses. That was a very cool head. It doesn't mean anything. But if that doesn't inspire you, your heart is certainly steel framed, the Bhagavatam says. There's something going wrong that you're doing wrong. Because there's so much cause for inspiration. There's devotees. I mean, I'm inspired with just any devotee, seeing them do their service, you know, hearing, seeing how a devotee dresses the deities in the morning. Like, you know, different devotees dress the deities. I'm inspired by that. I mean, I don't have to approach someone who's like descended from the spiritual world to be inspired. That means you've got problems. You better see who you're offending if you're not feeling inspired. Because I pick up Prabhupada's books, I'm feeling inspired. I hear kirtan, I'm feeling inspired. So many things. Isn't it? I mean, so many gurus. There's some problem with you. It's not with the source of inspiration.
I just think because I saw many friends that they have like 25 years in the movement, and still they are looking for a guru. They know many gurus, and they are.
Well, they first of all accept Prabhupada, then they'll be inspired. And someone who's a servant of Prabhupada, they will accept as their Diksha Guru. But Prabhupada can be, for them, their primary guru. The Siksha Guru, in the case of Prabhupada, he's the primary guru for everybody in ISKCON. So it's inspiring. I mean, there's so many things that inspire me. I read the books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I get inspired. I read Prabhupada's books, I get inspired. I see a picture of the deities, I get inspired. I mean, where's the lack of inspiration? Only when you're offending Vaishnavas do you actually lack of inspiration. Right? That's their problem. That's their problem. Don't criticize Vaishnavas. Don't, like Prabhupada, there's one lecture I was listening to, Prabhupada said three times, don't ever criticize Vaishnavas. Don't ever criticize Vaishnavas. Don't ever criticize Vaishnavas. Don't even think ill of them. And even if they make a mistake, don't criticize them. Don't criticize them. Don't criticize them. No matter where they are, even if they're in a different religious organization, even if someone's in a member of a church or something, don't criticize them. And then you'll be happy. Then the holy names will be sweet as nectar instead of difficult for you. Okay, I think we have to end now because it is time to end class. Well, thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace. Shubha Bhakti Prabhupada Ji.